As far back as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Hi, I'm Brian from Olathe, Kansas, and you're listening to WGXC Akron 90.7 FM.
I'm Tom Rowe in Akron. You've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And this morning we will speak live with Karen Beckingham and Dan Clifton, members of the Cornwallville Residents for Rural Preservation, who oppose a proposal to build 12 high-end homes and a farming operation on 95 acres of land in Cornwallville. We'll hear all about that. And the second of the two public hearings is Saturday, December 11th at the Durham Elementary School on this issue. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Channel connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network.
Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info at wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wave Farm Radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Ulster County reported two more coronavirus-related deaths December 7th. That brings the total there to 304. Altogether, Ulster County has 964 COVID cases, up from the 953 reported on December 6th. More troubling, Ulster County's positivity rate grew to 9.7% on December 7th, up from the 5.8% the day before. Dutchess County, across the Hudson River, reported another 38 cases on December 7th. The county remained over 1,000 active cases for the first time since April, with 1,065. Dutchess County currently has a 5.83% positivity rate. Meanwhile, Columbia County reported 55 more COVID-19 cases December 6th and 59 more on December 7th. And Greene County reported 84 more cases on December 6th and 23 more on December 7th, with 296 active positives.
Steve Hughes reports in the Times Union that Albany and Schenectady County officials issued a joint health advisory December 7th, asking residents to wear masks in public regardless of vaccination status. On December 5th, Ulster County officials also asked their residents to all wear masks indoors. These edicts come as locally COVID-19 case counts are rising and a new Omicron variant is reaching New York. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said they did not issue a mask mandate because of the enforcement issues. He said, and I quote, "Just because there isn't a mandate doesn't mean you shouldn't do the right thing," end quote. Recently, there were 8 deaths in 6 days in Albany County from coronavirus. While Ulster, Albany, and Schenectady are united in message, McCoy said he could not get other local counties to make the same announcement. He said, and I quote, "We haven't been able to do all that to get everyone in sync to come up with the same message," end quote. He added, and I quote, "The only way new restrictions will work is if we do it on a regional basis approach," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Natasha Vaughn Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Greene Media that staff at the Pine Haven Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Philmont are keeping an eye on an outbreak of COVID-19 cases. The Columbia County Department of Health announced the positive cases at the facility on December 3rd. Quote, 9 residents and 7 staff have tested positive, and all of them are vaccinated, unquote, Pine Haven spokesperson Jeff Thompson said. Quote, "This week we will be getting their booster shots as well. A pharmacy is coming in to do that," unquote. 2 of the residents are in the hospital, and 6 staff members are out because of their protocols, which specify how long after testing positive a staff member must stay out of the facility. Quote, "The symptoms seem to be less severe than in the past. Now that people are vaccinated, it's kind of like a bad cold," unquote, Thompson said. The facility believes the virus came in through a visitation a few days before Thanksgiving. Staff members and residents are tested weekly, Thompson said. Prior to this outbreak, it had been several months since the facility had a positive COVID-19 case. Quote, "The vaccines really do appear to be having a positive effect," unquote, Thompson said. Quote, "What they did and what all the nursing homes are doing is that anyone who ends up positive, they are concentrated in a certain area," unquote. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said, quote, "So far, so good. We haven't had any additional positives over there," unquote. The Grand Rehabilitation and Nursing at Barnwell had 2 positive cases recently, Mabb said. The entire county has been experiencing an increase in the number of positive cases it is seeing. We had 57 on Saturday, which is a big number for us, unquote, Mab said on December 6th. Quote, and we had 52 today, which actually encompasses Sunday and today. I think this is Thanksgiving. We're near the end now of the typical 11-day run, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako reports in Porcupine Soup that six small business and property owners in the Coxsackie Reed Street Historic District have been given $347,000 in state funding through the New York Main Street program. The money will go to facade and building improvements to preserve the mid-19th century storefronts. The awards include $150,000 for restoration of the Patrick Henry's Tavern, Dolan Block, and James Newberry Hotel Spa, $50,000 for Lower Landing Restaurant, $47,000 for proposed arts and community space, $47,000 for proposed ice cream shop, $23,550 for the Manson Reed General Store, $16,715 for the bottle shop, and $12,735 for Heartland Realty Upstate and Pilot House Paper. State Senator Michelle Henchy said at a ceremony announcing the funding, and I quote, "The Coxsackie Reed Street Historic District, once the doorway to Hudson River trade in the mid-19th century, is a local gem that small area entrepreneurs are working diligently to revive with an eye on launching several new local businesses," end quote. Coxsackie is currently undergoing a bit of state-funded makeover. In September, New York State announced a $3.2 million project to fix up the nearby Coxsackie State Boat Launch and Riverside Park on the Hudson River, and that construction is currently underway. Coxsackie Mayor Mark Evans said, and I quote, "This is another recognition of what is happening in Coxsackie and the renaissance we are experiencing with the redevelopment of the downtown waterfront area," end quote. You can read more about this story in Porcupine Soup.
Kenneth C. Crow II is reporting for the Times Union that a carcinogenic chemical used in degreasing has been discovered in 12 residential wells in Nassau in Rensselaer County in a plume extending south of a state Superfund site heading toward Columbia County. Nassau Supervisor David Fleming said December 6, quote, "There's one well above the state standard. They are currently on bottled water. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has begun the process for an in-home treatment facility for that property," unquote. The carcinogen TCE, or trichlorethylene, originated from the environmentally hazardous state Superfund site on Route 203. That site is connected to the federal Superfund site at the Dewey Lowful Landfill, said Fleming. Quote, "Our immediate priority is the most rapid protection of human health possible. Our additional priority is the cleanup of this new contamination discovered along Route 203, just north of I-90 and the Columbia County border," unquote, Fleming said. The EPA reported it collected tap water samples at 61 residences in October near the Route 203 site. There was no TCE detected in 48 residences, but it was found in a well nearby. EPA said it was working with the town, Rensselaer County, State Health Department, and State Department of Environmental Conservation when dealing with the Route 203 site. The Dewey Lowful Landfill is labeled a toxic dump with approximately 46,000 tons of industrial waste. The toxic materials buried there include industrial solvents, waste oil, PCBs, scrap materials, sludge, and solids. Quote, "It's going south towards Columbia County," unquote, Fleming said about the groundwater pollution running from the Route 203 site. Quote, "It highlights the need to get a public drinking water source to these people," unquote, Fleming said. Quote, "This has been my personal concern since we learned of the contamination," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Noah Zweifel reports in the Altamont Enterprise that in the town of Bern these days, all things are political, even the dog catcher. On December 1st, the Bern Town Board voted 3-0 to make Bern resident Donna Ferranio the dog control officer. During the discussion on who to hire before the vote, councilperson Leo Vane referred to the dog control position as, and I quote, political, end quote. Deputy Supervisor Dennis Palo then argued that it is not a political position. Then Vane said, and I quote, "Of course it is," end quote. and he asked whether the former door control officer didn't resign over, and I quote, political issues, end quote. Pelos said he was not aware that the political factors were involved in Jody Jensen's decision to resign in April. Burns supervisor Sean Lyon said, and I quote, I don't know of any political or unofficial reasons for his resignation. Mr. Johnson and I have known each other our whole lives, and I believe him to be trustworthy and honest, and I don't believe any politics led him to resign, end quote. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that New York State officials are providing up to $2 million to help with the resettlement of Afghan refugees following the U.S. evacuation this summer, Governor Kathy Hochul said December 7th. The state funds will be used for programs meant to provide health care and mental health, as well as services for language skills, job training, and immigration legal assistance. Quote, for generations, immigrants have come to New York and the U.S. seeking freedom and opportunity, their contributions defining and strengthening the fabric of our state and nation, unquote, Hochul said. Quote, with Afghan evacuees fleeing widespread instability in their own country, New York State is proud to take a leading role in the massive resettlement effort, unquote. The state funds are in addition to $3 million from the New York State Enhanced Services to Refugees Program, which will be administered through the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance at the state level. New York is helping 1,790 people who evacuated from Afghanistan since September. They will be resettled at locations statewide, including 250 people in Albany, 495 in Buffalo, 190 in the New York City metropolitan area, 50 in Niagara Falls, 275 people in Rochester, and 420 people in Syracuse. Read more about the story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a chance of light snow. It will be cloudy with a temperature high near 35 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of snow showers or light snow before 7 p.m. Then a slight chance of snow showers between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming clear with a temperature low of around 23 degrees. And on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 35 degrees. And a slight chance of snow showers after 1 a.m. on Thursday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 25 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Wednesday, December 8th at WGXC, including at 10 a.m. we head to Italy on the Synth Eclectico show. Then at 11 a.m. we head back to Hudson for the Hudson Cafe with Maria Manhattan, today with a tribute to Stephen Sondheim. At noon, it's time for the Bedazzled Radio Hour. We're live from Catskill then after the local news with 2 hours of rock and more from Spike Priggen live from his Spike Record Rack store on Main Street in Catskill. At 3 p.m., radio artist Judy Dunaway is the featured guest on the Radio Survivor show. She plays the balloon, among other instruments. At 6 p.m., we hear from retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson on All Together Now about local thunderstorms in December. At 8 p.m., it's time for Music for the Masses with Neva Wartell. And at 10 p.m., we hear another tribute to Stephen Sondheim, this one on the All Mixed Up show on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Why did you say that? Aloha out there in Radio Land.
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Up from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music, plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles, alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
He told President Putin directly that if Russia further invades Ukraine, the United States and our European allies would respond with strong economic measures.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan recounted President Biden's two-hour virtual meeting yesterday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two leaders spoke as a troop buildup on the Ukrainian border has exacerbated fears about a potential Russian military invasion of its neighbor. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell confirmed Tuesday a deal has been reached on raising the nation's debt limit, which can now pass with a simple majority.
I think this is in the best interest of the country by avoiding default. I think it is also in the best interest of Republicans who feel very strongly that the previous debt ceilings that we agreed to when President Trump was here carried us through August.
New York Representative Adriano Espaillat joined activists on Capitol Hill Tuesday calling on senators to include a path to citizenship in the Build Back Better legislation.
We must make sure that the Senate hears us loud and clear that if our ruling is adversarial to us, that we must move forward and challenge her ruling and make sure we take this vote on the floor. Let the votes fall where they may.
Espaillat is the first formerly undocumented immigrant to serve in Congress. The National School Boards Association is facing a loss of funding and membership after sending a letter comparing parent protest and threats to domestic terrorism. Center for Renewing America President Russ Vogt commented on how controversies could influence the 2022 midterms.
I think it will be a central issue. Wokeism, critical race theory, as it manifests in schools, parents are increasingly waking up to it.
The Senate Judiciary Committee heard testimony on Tuesday on Guantanamo Bay Prison's operations, conditions, and efforts to close it. National Security Institute Executive Director Jamil Jaffer spoke about the risks of closing Guantanamo and bringing detainees to the U.S.
If we bring them voluntarily to the United States, there's the possibility that they'll receive significantly more rights and significantly more opportunities under our own laws.
The White House marked the first ever Maternal Health Day of Action on Tuesday. Vice President Kamala Harris.
Black women are three times as likely to die from pregnancy-related complications. We should do something about that. When we know that Native American women are more than twice as likely to die from pregnancy-related complications, we've got to do something about that.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, December 8th. Early this morning, we see lows of 25 in Twilight Park and 30 in Netherwood. It's gonna snow today. Everyone is getting something, but the region will vary in amounts. Northern and elevated areas will be getting more than others. Our area should see a steady dusting during the morning commute, a small break just after noon, which will see our daily high temperature of 37 degrees, and then before 3 p.m., the steady snow should resume. Total daytime accumulation is expected to be up to a half inch. Overnight, the snow gets a little stronger, ending before midnight. A low of 24 degrees is expected. Tomorrow will be a little windy with a high of 38 degrees. Friday, a teeny bit of snow before dawn will fall, and then a high of 44 degrees will happen. Saturday gets into the cool territory, and that's an absolute cool, not a relatively cool, with a high of 57 degrees. And stormy all day with about an inch of rain expected with some heavy wind gusts. Sunday, things dry out with a high of 43 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:09 a.m., high tide at 6:01 a.m., low tide again at 12:16 p.m., and high tide again at 6:20 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 40 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:07 a.m. Looking way up, we see Comet Leonard on rapid approach. This morning, it just became visible to the naked eye. It will continue to increase in magnitude until Friday, which will be its closest approach. Solar wind speed is currently 413 kilometers per second at 5.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair for daytime up to 8 megahertz and fair across the board for overnight transmissions. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 13. And this has been the Bed of Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wavefarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Daniel Rue of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Thank you.
All right. Spring Hill Jack is getting us started this morning on the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra on a slightly snowy day. There's a little bit of confectionery sugar on the ground here in Accra. And I think it's supposed to stop for a while, and then we might get a little bit more in the evening. But not much. So it's not... nothing's closed or delayed or anything today. But we're next going to talk to two folks, Karen Beckingham and Dan Clifton, from the Cornwall Residence for Rural Preservation. And they want to talk about a proposal to put a number of houses and a farm on a property in Cornwallville. But let's let Karen and Dan explain what they're talking about here on the WGXC Morning Show. Karen and Dan, can you hear us?
I can.
Yep, good morning. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining us from Cornwallville in Greene County. So tell us about this issue that you guys have. You formed this group just because of this one issue, right?
That's correct. The group was formed, and it's called Cornwallville Residents for Rural Preservation. It was formed about a year ago. It was shortly after the developer, Bosque Development, purchased 95 acres in Cornwallville and let everyone know his intention was to develop a subdivision. And he filed the first application in November, just about a year ago. But I will quickly describe what the proposal is, and both Karen and I and our organization have a lot of objections, as we'll get into probably later in the interview, we even filed a lawsuit just a couple weeks ago. But what the proposal to take the, let's call it 95 acres, it's one big lot of 90 and a small lot of about five. Take that property, which has been untouched for over 100 years. It's located in the center of the hamlet of Cornwallville and also in the center of the Cornwallville Historic District, which was designated by the Town of Durham Historic Preservation Commission more than 30 years ago. And he wants to develop it to build 12 contemporary houses and one barn slash event space to be used, apparently, from what he says in interviews and his application, as a community center and as a small-scale farming operation for his community, for the Bosque community, where they will, in theory, have cows and goats and chickens and sheep, maybe, and provide produce and milk, etc. And more, I don't know if it's more importantly or not, but it's certainly important to the surrounding properties. It is going to be a community center where they will have parties and barbecues and graduation events and bridal showers and kind of outdoor cookouts for the community and members and their families and friends, etc., throughout the year. I could go on and on, Tom, but I'd rather if you just ask me a few questions.
Sure. I mean, I think I want to make a full disclosure that I have a brother-in-law that lives in Cornwallville, and so we may have to say in this, so I'll play a devil's advocate here, but you paint a rosy picture. It sounds like you guys are all in favor of this project.
Not at all. The rosy picture is from the developer's point of view, and if I was painting that picture, I apologize, because it's not the picture that we see. We live in a rural community in Cornwallville. We have a town comprehensive plan that was adopted just last year by the town after 2 years of input by the residents of Durham, meetings, emails, workshops, etc. And the town comprehensive plan in it envisions, well, this is in its vision and goal section, a continuation of the rural community, the rural beauty, not a large subdivision. And because they recognize that that is what the residents want, and also it's our draw. It's why people would come to Cornwallville, why would they would come to Durham, not to come see a subdivision, but to see the scenic roads. And we have 22 miles of scenic roads that, that are part of a scenic byway recognized by the state of New York. And we have, as I said before, a historic district designated by the town of Durham. And part of the criteria for designating that historic district, which the town has simply ignored in this, is the preservation of the scenic views. That was, you know, expressed kind of designation materials 30 years ago by the Historic Preservation Commission and in the lawsuit. The chairperson of the commission has submitted an affidavit in support of us, in kind of stating that.
And I'm sorry to interject, but can I just say that the town board ignored those submissions from our experts, right, on the historical preservation and the environmental impacts that this subdivision would have. We had experts, you know, and submit letters that were ignored, and of course everybody in the community wrote a letter addressing their concerns about the environmental impact. And I have to tell you, apparently none of the, now I am not an environmental expert, nor an expert on septic systems, and I rather resent that I've had to actually become an expert on these so that I could defend my position against this development, but none of the PERC tests passed, and they are planning on putting in raised bed septic systems, and we're concerned about the leach field. My property borders on the subdivision where the what we're calling the party barn and the stable, and of course a vertical greenhouse would be. My two wells are about 120 feet from their septic systems. Where's the leach field? Where is the waste going from this party barn that has recently been resubmitted with four bathrooms, which means it can accommodate 100 people at a time? And where's the leach field for that? Where's the leach field for the barn, for the milking operation, which, by the way, my husband is a farmer, a dairy farmer. It requires quite a bit of water, and there's quite a bit of waste in terms of, you know, antiseptic when you're running a milking operation. And, you know, where's the waste going? It will certainly have an impact on my two wells, my pond, my neighbor's pond. The board, every single one of them, came to my property and were graciously hosted by my friend and neighbor, Walter and Anna Grote. They took the board around and showed them.
They took the board around together, the entire board?
No, separately. They
separately, okay, because that's legal, because it's not, you can't have a public meeting without the public being there.
No, they brought them over, they hosted them at their home, they sat on the porch and had an iced tea, they walked around and saw how close this operation would be to our wells and our ponds, and still, they declared that there would be absolutely no environmental impact for this project, right? And it's that negative declaration that we're so upset about. And by the letter of the law, we don't feel they took a hard look really at what impacts there would be. Noise and light and odor, and of course the groundwater and the surface water. They declared that there'd be a negative impact on everything.
Can I interject something here?
Sure, right now?
Karen makes a critical point. And I want to put it in the framework of the CEQA law. That's the State Environmental Review law, which they're required to follow in some situation like this where we have a major subdivision, and they acknowledge they're required to file that law. And there are just three points I want to make, and I'm not an expert on CECRA either. Fortunately, we have a lawyer who is representing us, Maeve Tuher of the Tuher and Barone firm up in Albany. But as Karen also notes, we've all become somewhat knowledgeable about this process over the course of the last year. And the three points I want to make about CECRA, and then bringing Karen's point in, is one, it's grounded. The law is grounded in the notion of public participation. That's important to the CECRA review. And we feel like we have been shut out. We send letters. We, as Karen said, we met with people. We attend every town board meeting where this is raised, and we try to make our voices heard. And occasionally we do. Sometimes it's, I hate to say it, but through talking loud. And we're told, wait for the public hearing. We're in the public hearing process now. But the town has already made its decision to finding that there's no significant environmental impacts. And that's the second point is about CECRA that I want to make. This is, again, recognized by the town as a quote unquote type one action under CECRA. That means there is a presumption that there are significant environmental impacts, a presumption that there should be an environmental impact statement. And the town acts as if there's not. The town, as Karen said, has our letters, has our statements, has our arguments, but they almost seem to just not take it seriously, because I will say the Bosque lawyers and experts have flooded them with paper. There are thousands of pages of documents that have been filed over the past year, most of it by the developer. The third point I want to make is that the law requires what's called a hard look. A hard look that's in the law. And given the problems, potential problems, that Karen has raised about the water, about the noise, about the light, and we haven't even gotten into really the fragmentation of the forest land fact. I've mentioned it, but not in the context of the hard look of the of them citing it in the middle of a historic district. We haven't talked about the transportation problems along Strong Road, which is a very quiet, bucolic road, but that's where their entrance to their private road is going to be. I raise these points not to say that one in particular, or even all of them, you know, will necessarily or should doom the project, but it should at least require a hard look. That's our biggest problem over the course of the months.
That's right.
I want to get into a couple things here, because I'm taking a couple notes. I don't see how having two giant public hearings is not the listening to the public. And I wonder about, okay, I've got two points I've written down about what you've said so far. Really, your two points are on views and environment. And on views, you're saying you don't want to look out your window and see 12 houses and a farm. And I would argue that when you guys look out your windows right now, you probably see 12 houses and a farm. I mean, I'm not sure where exactly you are in Cornwallville, but that's a typical view in Cornwallville, is to see some homes and some farms, right? So you can argue against that.
For me in particular, my home is situated less than 150 feet from where this two-story structure will be, and a greenhouse, which of course I had to, you know, learn a little bit about that too. That requires industrial fans and industrial lighting that would be going, you know, all day and all night. So you have, you know.
So you're not talking about the views again. Now you're talking about something else, because I thought we were talking about views. Okay, so my question is, I have two questions, and you didn't let me finish my two questions. So my two questions are, the views, you typically right now you look at your house, and that's what you see, 12 houses on a farm in Cornwallville, and, you know, I'm looking out my window, and I see, personally, I would, I've been saying for years that this view out my window right now, I've got this great view of the Catskill Mountains, and I think it should be ruined. I believe it should be ruined with windmills, because if this planet is going to decide, we're all going to have to make sacrifices, and we need windmills on those mountains because there's wind up there. There's a source of energy up there. So we're not talking about that here. We're talking about, you know, people have used windmills as against the view shed in Columbia County and all kinds of places. They don't want to see solar. They don't want to see. That's something, and that's an issue that's been.
That's question number one.
All right, so you're in charge of the interview now. All right, so view shed, and so I'd like you to address that issue. And then secondly, the environment, I haven't heard you raise an issue. I've been to plenty of planning board meetings, and Durham doesn't have a planning board, but the town board serves as a planning board. And I've never seen a positive declaration on Seeker for a house. I mean, and I want you to explain this. You've got an Article 78. Article 78s are very rarely won. I know, because we at Wave Farm had Article 78 with the town of Cairo. We won two Article 78s with the town of Cairo. I've never heard an Article 78 win saying a house is an environmental hazard. And then final question is, if people wanted to put 12 houses in Cornwallville and they weren't together, you'd be against that? Cornwallville is topped off right now. That's the number of homes, and there can't be any more.
Could I answer that, Tom?
There's two questions on the table now.
Well, you actually preceded it with another question or a comment that I want to address first, because it's mistaken. You said, how can we say that we haven't had input when we're in the middle of a public hearing?
Two public hearings, big giant public hearings at the Durham School, and the second one is this Saturday at what time does it start?
6 p.m. I'd mentioned it earlier, the town, at its August and October town board meetings, the workshop meetings, they voted to issue a negative declaration, meaning there no significant adverse environmental impacts, meaning that they're not going to require an environmental impact statement for anything. That's the prelude to approving it. The public hearing is now. After that, in what you're suggesting, I think in the premise of your question is, that's good. That's good for us. We can now come in and we can complain about what they did. Well, they've done it. We wanted input for the last year because we wanted to prevent them from doing it, not to come in after the fact and complain about them having done it. That's one.
So they don't take letters and they don't let you speak at town meetings in Durham?
Well, let me answer that. Letters they take. I have no idea whether they've read them because they weren't discussed at town board meetings. And when you say let us speak at town board meetings, we have very, very little chance to talk about these issues at town board meetings. And I've been to every single one. We're told, okay, you know, you have at the end, you have like 5 minutes. This is after Bosca's made a big proposal. There's very little discussion about the details. As I say, thousands of pages of documents. I'm glad that they let us stand up and say something at the end. But if you were at any of the town board meetings, there was a constant back and forth of, you'll have your chance. You'll have your chance at the public hearing. Okay, we're trying to take advantage of that. you know, many residents came to the first day. I assume many residents will come to the second day. You know, but, you know, this is our chance to get the town to take a vote to rescind what they've already adopted. I think that's a very hard proposition.
Listen, with all due respect, your view shed question in the beginning, I don't object to looking out my window and seeing new homes going up. I happen to know a couple that is building a home right around the corner from me. This is not that, and we've heard that from many people. Well, I have somebody building this in my backyard, and I have somebody doing this. That's not what we're talking about here. This is a private community, and right in my backyard on my property is an event space. Not just a, they're calling it a barn, it's an event space. And there is also a stable and supposedly going to be, you know, a farming operation. I actually have no objection to that either. What I do object to is I feel entitled to know what the environmental impact will be from these 12 homes and this event space and this barn. And I will not know what that impact is unless they rescind their negative declaration and require an environmental impact statement. That's what we're asking for now.
That's correct. And Tom, let me speak to the premise of your questions also, the business about what Karen said, looking out a window in Cornerville and what do you see, et cetera. We are in a situation that is, again, a specific kind of action, a major subdivision under CEQA. This is a type one action. That's not every situation. That means they have to go through a review process. They have to consider any number of different impacts from community character to the water runoff, stormwater runoff, to the water well water issue, to whether this is going to deplete the aquifer, to the noise and light. That's not something that if Joe Jones built a house on, you know, on Gulf Schoolhouse Road, a road in Cornwallville, you know, that the town has to look at because it doesn't.
Every project has they have to declare whether they're going to do a major seeker or not, or there's a negative declaration. Every project and every planning board in New York State.
Well, I mean, Tom, you're mistaken on that.
No, I'm not. I've been to lots of planning board meetings. I went to planning board meetings for our own project, and we got a negative seeker.
If I could tell you, there are different types of actions. There's unlisted actions, type one actions, and type two actions under CEQA. Type one is the most serious. Type one is where there is a presumption that there will be a positive declaration, a presumption that there will be significant environmental impacts. Unlisted actions, that's not the case. Type two, it's not the case. Again, if I build a single house on Cornerville Road, almost certainly that's going to be an unlisted action or type two action, and it's not going to require the kind of review that is required under the CEQA law for this subdivision. And it's not the same as just looking out the window and seeing a house. Again, we're talking about a town-designated historic district.
Yeah, looking out the window is about the view shed. It has nothing to do with the environmental issues, so I don't know why you're bringing that in. But we've only got 6 minutes left, so I want to make sure you guys have a chance to... like I was trying to say, we only have 6 minutes left, so I want to make sure you guys get your chance to say what you're talking about here.
Well, I would like to say that you brought up the view shed, and I think that's why we addressed it.
I brought up the view shed earlier, and he was talking about environment, and then dragged the view shed into an environment. And the view shed has nothing to. The view shed has nothing to do with the environment. Is all I was saying, and you're bringing it again and trying to mix this.
You're incorrect again, Tom, but I'll talk after Karen's done.
Our town, this town, obviously, there's a lot of dissension, and our town is very divided, and we're upset. People are upset. Nobody wants to.
But why are they upset? Let's stop talking about. What are the actual issues?
Well, let me finish.
Why are you upset? Tell us why you're upset.
Nobody wants to be in this position. Nobody wants to be suing. I'm concerned about my future livelihood. I'm concerned about the impact of the raised bed septic systems, which again are put in when PERC tests fail. And I'm concerned about my two wells and the quality of my pond water and the environment and all of it. But let me say, one way to bring this town back together is to at least reverse the negative deck, require the environmental impact study, and let the chips fall where they may. That's really all we want right now. We want to know what the impact will be of this project on the environment, and for us personally, on our wells and our ponds. Perhaps if we could just at least get there, it will bring us back together a little bit. Dan?
Oh, sure. thanks, Jake. Tom, we've raised a number of issues, not just that we're upset throughout this, and we've raised issues about the possibility of depletion of the aquifer. We've sent to the town a table of surrounding properties that have been having well problems. What is it going to do? They've already have well problems. What is the digging of another 13 wells going to do with respect to their problems? That's something that the town is supposed to look at and supposed to protect neighboring properties. I've talked about traffic on Strong Road. I've talked about the fragmentation of the 95 acres in the middle of the Cornwallville Historic District. I've talked about the noise and the light and the odor pollution that's going to be right next to Karen Beckingham's house, as well as others, Walter Grote, Abigail Agronaut, right next to it, where they're going to have presumably cookouts, parties, etc., in the good weather, probably on a weekly basis. Nothing to stop them.
I would like to make one suggestion, because I know we're running out of time, and I think Tom, you too, and anybody who's listening should go to the town board website and read the letters that we have already submitted over the past year. If you want to know what we're concerned about, what we're upset about, you can read letter after letter after letter.
And is there a website for Cornwallville Residents for Rural Preservation that people can look up to?
Well, that's not where they are. They're posed yesterday.
I know. People can. You said that people can go there. I'm saying, is there other places? We only have a limited time. I want to make sure you give out the. You have a Facebook page or something?
There is a Facebook page. I think it's a Save Strong Road Facebook page. But in terms of getting a look at anything involving this application and opposition to it, the Town of Durham website is a good place to go, because you can look at the letters, you can look at the application if you want, or you can look at our experts' reports. All of that has been posted, and I'd recommend it. Anyone interested in this, take a look. Happy to answer any more questions, Tom.
Well, I don't think we have time for another question, so I was just going to let you guys, we got about a minute and a half left.
Okay. We have, I'll just mention, we have an Article 78 petition that was filed. I know you've commented that they're hardly ever granted. I have no idea what that's based on, but ours is going to be heard on January 14th, unless it's adjourned. Before Judge Fisher, I believe. We have both procedural issues where we feel that the town has not followed correct procedure, and we have substantive issues, some of which we've talked about today. We think we have a good case. I'm sure that the town and the BOSC will respond before the hearing, and there'll be argument on it, and we'll see what the judge does.
All right, Karen, you got the final word?
Oh, no, I'm good to go. Thanks for having us. And again, I'd like even for you, Tom, to go and read our letters on the town board website. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. We've been joined today by Karen Beckingham and Dan Clifton from the Cornwallville Residents for Rural Preservation. They're against the proposal for 12 houses and a farm in Cornwallville, and there is a public hearing this